Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics. This is episode 10, recorded May 12, 2009. Hey, everybody.
Hey.
Today we're going to do an episode on...
redworms.
Also called fishing worms, compost worms, and various other things. And in fact... there's more than one species that's used, but they're commonly referred to as redworms, and we'll probably call them that throughout the rest of this podcast, because we feel like it.
Okay, why do we want to keep redworms?
Well, redworms are great fish food, and because they start out quite small, they make great fish food for many different species, starting out from very, very small species, such as the diminutive dwarf puffer. I've used newly hatched redworms with great success for dwarf puffers, up to very, very large cichlids and so on that will take the adult redworms, which are maybe about 3 inches long. So, wide appeal for a variety of species. Corydoras catfish love the small ones. Coolie loaches love the small ones. Just about guppies will even eat the small ones. I've seen it happen, folks. Just about anything will take these worms, of course.
Did they make Julian fries?
I don't know. We'd have to see. But they're not a complete food, of course. You wouldn't want to feed them as a complete diet. But they do have some good nutrients in them. Fish love them. So there you go. Plus, they're good for fishing. And as you'll see later, they're also very good for your garden and for reducing green waste and so on.
Okay, what kind of a setup do you need for redworms?
Well, they like the dark, so it's good to have an opaque container. The container also needs to be able to retain moisture fairly well. Plastic is good, but people use wood on occasion as well. It needs to be fairly oxygen-rich, so you will need ventilation holes. If you're making your own container, then you can drill those, you know, fairly small holes in it. But a lot of the commercial units you buy come with those holes already in them. And then there'll need to be provision for drainage into some sort of container, because the metabolism of the worms and the nature of the wet food that you give them ensures that they do produce a lot of liquid, and that needs to be dealt with. And then they'll need bedding of some sort. So bedding, usually a lot of things can be used. You can use the shredded coconut fiber that's sold as bricks for reptile bedding and so on. That works fine. You can get that in a pet store for a few bucks for a brick. You can use newspaper, as long as it's not the colored, glossy kind of newspaper. You know, you want black and white newspaper. That works fine. Shredded cardboard works. Shredded just normal white paper works. There are quite a few options there. Whatever you can get a hold of, basically, in those kinds of items will work fairly well. I would say that if you have the money for it, and they can be quite expensive, but if you do, go with one of the commercial units, because they already are pre-drilled with the ventilation you need. They're durable. They often have provision for maintenance of the worm culture that makes it much easier.
Do we have a link or some other kind of resource for people to find those?
I'll put a link for some of those on the resources page. But if you don't want to go that route, you want to just go the cheap route. And I've done this, too. I've done both ways, both the commercial units and homemade units. You can just get a couple of plastic storage containers that nest one into the other.
How big?
Depends on how many worms you want to produce. Yeah. Let me tell you, I started out with a very small culture of worms given to me by a friend, and I used plastic food saver containers that, you know, are maybe 4 or 5 inches by 4 or 5 inches.
Like the sandwich size?
Yeah, sandwich size. Put a few worms in there with a little bit of shredded newspaper and just very small amounts of food. And after a few, you know, a month or so, I realized I had a lot more worms in there. So I went up to a larger container, the shoebox size, and I nested two into each other, drilled holes in the top one so that water would drain down into the lower one, and drilled holes in the sides and top of that same container for ventilation. Very small holes, because you don't want the worms to crawl out and you don't want other things getting in. After a few months, I had to graduate to a larger container. I went to a 5-gallon container after that, and they just kept, you know, getting bigger and so on.
So getting a commercial one will also save you the trouble of having to keep making a new container
every
couple of months.
Yes, although it is much more expensive. So go either way. Just make sure that you do have provision for drainage and ventilation just by drilling holes in the bottom, sides, and top
now, of what do you use to drill the holes so that they're not too big?
Just a drill. You just pick a very fairly small bit. It's if you get a bit that's maybe a millimeter or two in diameter, then you should be fine. So yeah, as long as it's a very small bore, so it looks like an adult worm can't crawl out of it. The young worms don't really try as much to crawl out, in my experience. The adult worms can crawl out in certain conditions, and we'll get to that, but make sure the holes are small enough so they can't, and you'll be fine. As long as you don't have liquid pooling at the bottom, you're probably doing okay. And like I said, the metabolism of the worms and the food that you give them is such that if you don't have enough ventilation, the liquid will pool and you'll drown your worms. And we'll talk a little bit more about what you can do with that liquid a little later.
It's magic.
Yeah, it's great stuff. So just keep in mind, to summarize, that they like it dark. So if you use a transparent or translucent container, keep it in a dark place. They like to be moist. They like a lot of oxygen, so make sure the container is well ventilated. They need drainage, and they need a bedding, a shredded cardboard or shredded paper, really good. Shredded coconut fiber works too.
Okay. So as far as feeding them goes, mm-hmm. what do we do?
Well, as compost worms, they're not picky, but there are a few things they really like, and of course you want to give them as healthy diet as possible so that some of the nutrients from that diet will be passed on to your fish. And so variety is good, but they'll eat just about any vegetable matter. They will eat meat too, but that's not really a good idea because meat products in their container can attract pests and so on. But anything that's not too greasy, too spicy, or too salty that you could have eaten but decided not to for whatever reason, you know, table scraps of
any kind of vegetable peelings or nubs or cut off ends and mm-hmm. apple cores,
all that kind of thing. Things that are too acidic, like citrus peels and so on, not a good idea. Oranges and so on. If something that has a lot of hot sauce or pepper or salt or just really greasy things, don't
put those in.
Potatoes
are just kind of annoying in it.
Potatoes, if you put live potatoes in there, those can grow in there for a while, and that's annoying. So, you know, you don't want to do that kind of thing. But just about anything else. Bread and grain products especially, they really go nuts over those. And watermelon rinds, they really get a kick out of those. They'll eat banana peels. But any, you know, bits of salad, bits of cereal that have been left in a bowl and soaked because somebody didn't want to eat it, all that kind of thing, they'll totally eat it. And especially the grain products.
So like anything you would put down your garbage disposal
basically
can go in the worm bin instead.
With the noted exceptions that we already mentioned.
Eggshells once in a while.
Yeah, especially if you grind them up. They do need a source of calcium, so you can toast eggshells in the oven, then mash them up with a rolling pin or whatever.
And the toasting is so that they don't promote bacteria.
Right, because raw eggs can have bacteria of various sorts. So you grind them up that way and then give them to them. That's really good for them. You can also get crushed oyster shell for use with pet birds, like parakeets and canaries and so on. You give them some of that. That's good for them to help them. It keeps the pH balance in the substrate, in the bedding, helps buffer that a little bit, but it's also good for the worms themselves. They also have gizzards, something like birds do. They have a crop where they grind up their food, but no teeth, and so it's good to provide them with grit. There are several sources for this, but one that I like to use, just get the fine grain bird gravel mm-hmm. for use with parakeets and finches and so on. And use that. It works great. There's even some kinds you can get that have calcium built into it. So you get, you're kind of killing two worms with one stone there. That's a good thing to use. Just add that periodically every few weeks, every month or so. They're not really that picky, but just make sure you're adding in food in small enough increments that your worms can handle it. That's important. You don't want to have it sit and putrefy. Worms can eat their weight or even more than their weight in 24 hours. So they are big eaters, but they're small. And especially when you start out with an initial culture, you want to make sure you have enough food in there that they have enough to eat. But you want to make sure that they can eat it within a couple of days. That's ideal. So just give them a small amount. If they finish it all, give them a little bit more than that the next time. If they finish it all, you know, within a few hours, and just regulate the quantity of food you give them that way.
Okay. Now, as far as breeding goes, there isn't really anything that you need to do other than give them a house and feed them, right?
Two worms is enough to get started. Of course, you want to start out with a larger number than that because... It'll take a while to get started. I did start out the first time I did it, and this was with a different species. This is not with the red worm, but this was with the Indian blue worm, I think they're called sometimes, because I lived in Hawaii, and you can't get red worms there. They don't do as well because of the climate and so on. But it was the Indian blue worm, I believe, and I started out with about six. And it was enough so that within months, you know, I had a lot of worms, but it started out fairly slow. You want to start out with about 1,000 if you can get it. And that's not hard to get from a, you know, a bait supply, or you can get them online, just order them, look up red worms, you can get 1,000 or so, or you can get them by weight, 8 ounces, 16 ounces or so on. You want to start out something like 16 ounces is ideal. Unless you want to start out with a very small quantity because you don't want to produce a lot of worms, that's fine too. But they do breed since one male and one female. Well, they're hermaphrodites, so two worms is both. It's kind of like getting two females and two males, because when they mate, they fertilize each other and they both lay a little cocoon of a few eggs afterwards. So they reproduce pretty quickly that way. One thing to bear in mind is that if you want to use small worms especially, you need to harvest regularly, because if you don't, your container will reach carrying capacity and you'll only get just enough worms to kind of replace the adults that are gone, and so they don't reproduce as quickly, and so you won't have very many small worms that you can find. But if you constantly harvest and you keep the population below capacity, you'll get a lot more small worms. So keep that in mind depending on what you're using. If you're feeding dwarf puffers or coolie loaches, you're going to need to harvest regularly to keep the numbers from getting too high and slowing down your reproductive rate.
Okay. Is there any other kind of maintenance?
Yes.
I need to know?
Yes, there are a couple. Besides feeding and using the grit and the calcium and so on, you're going to need to replace bedding regularly as the worms eat the bedding. And you're going to need to add, so newspaper, shredded coconut fiber, or shredded cardboard, or whatever it is.
Non-printed half of cardboard egg cartons.
Yeah, we'll use the cardboard egg cartons. Just add that. You can add it whole, or you can shred it up. They'll take care of it more quickly if you shred it up, or you can add it whole, and they'll slowly rip it apart. But we add those to our culture. You'll need to add that regularly for several reasons. One is to help keep the moisture balance. It'll absorb excess moisture if there is some in there. It'll also give them a carbon source, which is good and helps just maintain the health of the culture, diluting toxins and so on in there. One thing to note is that vermicompost, which is the worm's waste that builds up there and is great for your garden or your lawn or whatever, or potted plants, anything. It's a great thing to add and use as a supplement for all of those plants. It has some toxins in it to the worms, and so you do need to remove it regularly, and there are a couple of ways to do it. Depending on the type of container you have, some containers have trays, perforated trays, that you just kind of stack one on top of the other, and when they fill the bottom one up with the vermicompost, you remove it and set another tray on top, and you dump out the other one, and you just kind of cycle through those trays, and that's a good way to do it. If you don't have one of the commercial units that's built like that, you'll need to do that. And one good way to do it is to take a big square of something. You can use weed block, you can use plastic, you can use newspaper. Set it outside in the bright sun. Just dump the vermicompost in there. And then just kind of scrape it off the top. And as you do, the worms will see the light and they will react to it and try to bury themselves in the center of the pile. So you just keep removing the vermicompost, which you then put on your garden or whatever.
You end up with a big ball of worms.
You end up with a ball of almost pure worms right in the middle. You dump back in your culture with a whole bunch of fresh bedding that you moisten. Make sure you moisten the bedding when you put it in. And there, you're good to go. That's probably the easiest way that I've used to do that. And it takes a little while, but you don't need to do it very often, depending on your culture. You might need to do it every 3 months or so. And that's a good way to do it. Also, the liquid that it produces if you're not absorbing all the liquid by adding fresh bedding, it's going to be dripping out, which is actually great because that's an excellent material for plants. Again, your garden plants, house
plants,
whatever.
Just to put some perspective on it, if you buy, they call it worm tea, if you buy it from like a garden catalog, it'll run you like $16 to $17 a gallon.
Yeah.
So it's like super fertilizer.
It's great fertilizer, and you get it free if you're raising these worms. So that's part of the reason I favor the commercial units with a spigot already attached, because you just pour it off with the little spigot, which usually has a valve on it that you can open and close. Pour it off with the spigot every couple of days, and you go pour it on your plants, and it's great stuff. I've seen the results on houseplants. You have to see it to believe it. They really, really like it. Good for them. So you need to do that regularly because the worms can drown in their own worm tea, as they call it. Other maintenance. Well, you do need to make sure that the that there are no pests getting into it. And there's a couple of things you can do. One of the best things is to keep it in a garage, because then if there are a few, you know, insects attracted to it or whatnot, then it's not really going to bother you very much. Or if you can find a place outside where it's protected from extremes of heat and cold, which is difficult in most climates, but if you can do it, that's a good thing to do. But a lot of people keep them in their houses with good success, and other people don't. We've had several different cultures over time, and one of the cultures was fine for a very long time until finally some ants found it. And that was, you know, the only thing that had found them in months and months. And then another culture was attacked by fungus gnats and fruit flies, and we ended up putting it out in the garage, and that's where we have it now, and it's doing fine out there, and we're not bugged at all by the little creatures that get to it. So
and there aren't as many as there used to be since we moved it either.
Yeah, and there aren't as many as there used to be, but they don't end up flying around the house and annoying us, so that's a good thing too. Now, there are a couple of other things we should talk about, I guess. One thing is if the culture is not comfortable for the worms, or when you're just starting out, sometimes the worms will try to escape. So you've got to watch for that. Bear in mind that usually means that there's something going on that shouldn't be going on. So
you did say to put a lid on the container, homemade container.
We did say
right?
that. I believe we did. Okay. But you do need a lid. It's true. A pretty tight-fitting lid, and just that's important. What else? A book to read if you want the entire scoop is Worms Eat My Garbage by Mary Appelhoff. That's basically my resource, and it's a good book, and where I got a lot of my start from this. And another thing that I think is great is that grindleworms. I put a few grindleworms in my culture, and they do really well in there too. So now I'm producing two species of worms in one culture container, and it works great. So that's a good thing to do.
Thanks for joining us.
Yep, enjoy the red worms. I know your fish will. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions, please email us at info@aquarimax.com.